Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When you finish recording, please hang up or press the hash key for more options.
Cool. All right, let's do this. Sure thing. Why not? Sure thing. Why not? I know. Sure thing. Why not? Why not? Why not? Why not? Cool, cool, cool. It's Sunday, which means it's time for the Front Three Q&A with me, Adam Ball, with the one and only Lawrence McKenna.
Season, well, it's not quite over yet, is it?
Not quite. Not quite. I'm also joined by Chris Hennage, in place of Dave O'Brien. He's actually in Manchester amid all the craziness going on at the moment. But Chris, welcome.
Good evening.
Good evening. Pretty eventful final day in the Premier League, I think it's safe to say. Now, before we get on to the painful stuff for myself, let's talk about what is probably, it is the biggest news today. A controlled explosion at Old Trafford after a lifelike device was found in the stadium. Police say the item was not viable after experts detonate the suspect package that saw the game between Manchester United and Bournemouth called off in Old Trafford. A very confusing situation, wasn't it, Lawrence? We were doing the live show on the Football Republic earlier. We were sort of hearing reports about half the stadium's being evacuated, then the whole stadium. It was all just a bizarre and unprecedented situation.
Well, unfortunately, I think it's because of the way that, you know, the world's structured right now. We obviously get breaking news. People want to be the first to report something rather than maybe the ones who are right. So they want to be ahead of everyone else, which leads to a kind of a weird kind of news haze where you can't quite work out what's true and what isn't. You know, 1 minute Stan Collymore is saying there's a bomb and the next minute people are saying it's a lifelike or a dummy, basically. As much as people are saying it's lifelike, it's all well and good. I mean, you know, you can sneak any box and a phone into a stadium and pretend it's a bomb. And so that's part of the point here. I think, you know, most news organisations would admit that they aren't always dead on things. So the panic that a lot of people felt is probably a legitimate panic, and you don't want to belittle that. But at the same time, let's just put it in perspective that it wasn't a real bomb, and it was a precautionary thing. It doesn't mean that we're not alluding to the wider problems that maybe a lot of the worry that people feel around Euro 2016 and, you know, just general safety in stadiums. I think a lot of people have addressed, you know, with going in stadiums as journalists or in boxes or just letting droves of, you know, 70 or 80,000, maybe even 100,000 people into any big area. It's hard to manage. And very often you don't feel the bags are checked correctly. But, you know, there's so many different things to unpack. What we have to say is it's not... It ultimately wasn't a real bomb. And, you know, as much as the initial news and everyone wants to panic about it, it's actually not the same story that maybe a real bomb would have gathered. And, you know, because of the way that people normally react and the way that people want to report it, sort of gets the reaction that a terrorist or someone who wants that sort of thing wants. So I almost feel like the best thing to do is sort of go, well, it's not real. We know what the concerns are. How does it affect your actions at a game, which is essentially to be vigilant and to be careful? Does it really affect you going to the football? Probably affects you looking out for people or sort of being cautious, but it certainly doesn't really affect anything that you should do at a game. So it's almost like leave it at that and move on almost for me.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing to say, of course, is that the whole operation should be applauded, really. The police, the security stewards, and all the fans. It was quite organized evacuation, really, and no real panic. So
that's why they did it. It's a good exercise, essentially. Thank you, whoever did that bomb, because you know you've shown people how to evacuate a stadium and remain calm correctly.
Yes, it was. In the end, it was a device, including a phone, strapped to a gas pipe. As I said, it was a controlled demolition, controlled detonation, I should say. And it's confirmed as a hoax, essentially. So hopefully, the people who planted that there will be found and dealt with swiftly.
Probably will find them. You know, there's a lot of CCTV in the stadium and stuff.
Talking of, well, from to an implosion, essentially, Kristen. Tottenham Hotspur today, losing 5-1 at Newcastle United, giving up second place to arch rivals Arsenal. Bitterly disappointing, of course, for Spurs fans. Mainly the manner in which they succumbed to defeat Newcastle. I mean, what were your thoughts on the game, and why did it go so horribly wrong for Spurs?
There was part of me expecting the Premier League to tweet out that Newcastle could stay in the league after all. just for entertainment's sake. I think what I would say, joking aside, is that what you saw was the next sort of step in the progression of Newcastle United under Rafa Benitez. And I say that because they score the goals, which again are quite fluid attacks, make the most of the assets at their disposal, Mitrovic, Wijnaldum. But then when they go a man down, there was a genuine expectation they would concede and Spurs would come back into the game. I think that's again where you see the organisation that Benitez brings, and also their ability to use the components at their disposal. So one of the reasons they bought Townsend was because he's like Sissoko. He's a great ball carrier, he's very quick. That meant that as Tottenham pushed, Newcastle could sit deep and spring on them.
Mm.
And again, the penalty is an abomination. It's an atrocious dive. It's one of the poorest dives I've seen in my time watching football. That aside, I think the other two goals, again, show that team's potential and why it is still a little bit of a surprise that they're going down. And one of the reasons they're going down is because Steve McClaren was allowed to stay so long. I think for Spurs, they were just too ragged. I think this is the problem, is that Chelsea game, it didn't just take players out of the team in suspensions. I think it took a lot of energy out of them as well and really kind of destabilised them as an organised unit.
It's been a pretty poor final four games for Spurs. Two defeats preceded by two draws, of course, having held the lead in three of those games.
Not only have they held the lead, but then there have been some massive thrashings in there and a lot of goals conceded. And not only that, but a seeming loss of loss of football control, maybe? We were talking about mentality earlier in the season. We all hoped that had changed. But it seems as if there's a kind of different aspect to that. Because, you know, someone else is tweeting in. Who was it that tweeted in about you and I being biased against Hazard, but not mentioning the Dembele? Here you go. Chelsea FC, Chelsea in 39 FC says, you didn't talk about the eye gouge. There have been some nasty things that Spurs players have done. It is a little bit weird how quickly it's sort of gone south. Fortunately, not many people drawing the line between an Argentinian implosion and the sort of underhanded nature of those people. And
do you want a fun fact?
I'd love one, Kristen.
In inverted commas. Exactly 20 years ago today, Arsenal finished ahead of Tottenham because Tottenham couldn't beat Newcastle on the last day of the season.
No way.
The history of repeating itself.
And also Sergeant Pepper told the band to play. No way.
They finished 1-1.
Back in April, the start of April, we'd beat Manchester United 3-0. We followed that up the week after the 4-0 thrashing of Stoke. The draw at West Brom, particularly disappointing at home. That was the sort of the night that it felt like the title challenge was slipping away, essentially. And then to draw 2-0 at Chelsea, which on the face of it isn't a bad result, but to be 2-0 up is what stings the most. And of course, losing to Southampton last weekend when a win would have confirmed second place was bitterly disappointing. And I think, you know, you look at the stats about missing Dembele, obviously a very important player for Spurs this season. I think, you know, Ali as well missing. But I think you guys are pointing to it there. It is more than just the players missing. It's been a pretty abysmal end to the season. I think it's a young team as well. Because it's a young team, there is that inexperience there, which may have sort of cost us towards the end. You know, you see Ali getting his ban and Dier and the likes were sort of going in against Chelsea and sort of losing their heads, as it were. I'm trying to remain positive and say, you know, to finish third, I would have snapped your hand off if you'd offered me that at the start of the season. But I think to be in a position we were 4 games ago, and to finish below Arsenal is very disappointing. And I think it could be good in a way, in terms of, you know, if we had finished above Arsenal and we sort of drawn today, it might have papered over the cracks in some way. You know, there wouldn't be the honest assessment of this is a team that needs to improve. I mean, we heard Pochettino saying a few days ago about how he wasn't going to sign many players in the summer, and, you know, he's happy with his team. I think, you know, if we are going to compete in the Champions League next season and do anything of note, then I think we need to recognise there are areas to improve in, and there are ways for Spurs to be taken to the next level.
There are other ways to acknowledge that as well. I mean, there's training that can be done on players. You could also, you know, at this point in the season, I'm always sort of reminded of that Steve Jobs speech where he talks about joining the dots backwards. And, you know, it seems very easy now for a lot of people to join the Leicester dots backwards and sort of go, well, you know, Ranieri, blah, 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 you know, he was ready for this, his methods, etc. There does seem to be a similar thing going on with Spurs, that, you know, that they need to go through a difficult time like this, some teams at least, in a sporting psychologically way, to be able to rise out of that. You know, there's a lot of times where that narrative is drawn for other teams, so why not draw it for Spurs?
Do you think you need that sort of Edgar Davins like influence? You know, a few years ago, I think it was under Yol, where you got Edgar Davids in for a season. Is that the kind of player you think Spurs need to go for in the summer? Someone
who's been got a there nasty and edge.
Yeah, I think, you know, we should against Spurs got a nasty edge, but I think there's
I'm thinking someone just to calm things down and give them the perspective when.
I think it's that lack of experience, and I think, you know, everyone talks about game management and how you need to sort of be smarter. And I think we couldn't. It's been a theme with Spurs a couple of times this season, even before the sort of the poor ending, that we've failed to take our chances and we've failed to hold on to leads. I mean, you've seen the stat even before these last two games about how Spurs have lost the most points from winning positions than any other team this season. I think there is a lack of nous in that team because they're so young. You know, we've got so many promising young players and we've all been massively impressed with them all. But I think there does need to be an acknowledgement that we do need more experience and maybe more level heads throughout the team. At the same time, even better. And it's Spurs going full Spurs today to somehow finish third in what just a few weeks ago was a two-horse title race with Spurs as one of those teams.
Incredible for Arsenal, though. I mean, yeah, to come back like that, and credit to Wenger for, you know, almost not giving in to, how would you put it? Sort of, he definitely fielded his strongest team on the final day, and, you know, didn't feel Rosicky or possibly Walcott in what could have been his final game.
Yeah, I've got to give credit to Arsenal, finished second. At the same time, I still think you have to say they have underperformed this season. They should have been close. Leicester are 10 points clear of Arsenal, which
absolutely.
I think is, yeah, pretty spectacular.
It's
gap.
Almost academic now, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, every big team is underperformed. I mean, we'll come on to Man City in a minute, who look to have all but secured fourth place as well. Manchester United have to win 19-0, I believe, against Bournemouth to get in the top four, which seems unlikely. It does seem
Are
unlikely.
You saying there's a chance?
Yeah.
You're saying there's a chance. Disappointing end to the season with Spurs, but I think, you know, if you look in perspective, a good season. From the place we were, though, it should have been better. I think that's fair to say. And there's definitely room to improve and ways that Pochettino can improve his team for next season. Pretty astonishing route either way. Swansea Man City finishing 1-1, point for Pellegrini's team. As I say, getting that top four finish. It is a disappointing season, though, Chris. I mean, there's no way to mask that. And we saw the City's fans' disappointment with their treatment, really, of Pellegrini in his farewell speech last week. It feels a bit of a disappointment in terms of they're also in the semi-finals of the Champions League, but quite meek there as well.
Yeah, I think they were quite ungrateful, City fans. I think, again, Pellegrini have achieved what they expected. I think he did achieve what was outlined for him, though. He did get the five titles in 5 years, so he did achieve that. It's a funny case with City in that sense, because I think you've got someone like Yaya Toure as well, who's now obviously got to depart in the summer. I think that's all but guaranteed. And you just wonder that if things don't go right for Pep Guardiola instantly, how will they react then? Because that's the thing. Since he was announced as their new coach, I think that's the point where City's season falls off the rails. Because then you know there's no need for Pellegrini to build past the end of the season. A lot of the players, I think, would imagine that it's the end of their season as well, or the end of their time at the club, I should say. And it just seemed quite a destabilising situation for the whole team and the whole club. So I think to end things on what is quite a tepid and sour note seems a bit harsh, because I think Pellegrini did bring benefits to City. I do think he improved them. He has also left them with problems, of course he has, but I think every coach does. And to almost revise history like that seems a little bit harsh on him and his achievements.
I mean, do you not feel this season, taken by itself, though, Lawrence, has been pretty underwhelming for City, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. The amount of money spent, all those sort of things, the expectation on the team. Yeah, I was thinking earlier today about like my own personal journey this season as a fan of Liverpool, and how earlier on in the season, when Liverpool had Rodgers, Liverpool fans were on the offensive of sort of, let's put things in perspective, let's put things into context, context perspective. And suddenly Klopp came in and there seemed to be a control to the club, and there didn't need to be such context and perspective all the time because they didn't seem to be scrambling for it. And I think the same can be applied to City. When you're offered something that you believe to be an improvement and then you sort of have to stick with what you have already, then it can lead to feelings of ungratefulness or all those sort of things. But the problem is the shame that is felt around that, because you're supposed to be sort of so loyal to the club, or you're supposed to sort of stick with people and those sort of things. It's kind of difficult to, it's impossible to justify those, because you're not supposed to feel those as a fan, or you're told you're not supposed to feel those as a fan. And so I think that's the difficulty with Man City, is that they're sort of caught in this place where they do have a load of good fans. But at the same time, it's very difficult for them not to sound ungrateful. I was really stunned when on the live show I said to one of the fans, are you grateful to Pellegrini for everything he's done? He was sort of like, not really. And I was sort of like, oh, right, okay, so this guy's almost gone like grey over you, and, you don't seem to appreciate that. And I find that hard to understand. But then at the same time, I don't, because earlier on in the season, Brendan Rodgers was forgotten in an instant. Because Klopp came in, and people don't seem to be talking about Liverpool fans in the same way, just because they're it was a sort of a clean break, if you will, or it seemed more justified in their eyes. But actually, I don't feel like there's any set of fans who wouldn't act in that way. It's just that actually, it's especially weird with Man City. I don't know what you think about this, Chris, because your team is sort of, they've got that big team mentality, but sometimes suffer from not a big team performance. And with Man City, it feels very similar, because just a few seasons ago, they were talking about, well, we're the underdogs, blah, blah, blah. And you were talking, Adam, about, your side not having the mentality or the experience to win the league. I just wonder whether the same can sometimes apply to fans. Is that, when you're used to being those underdogs.
I just think Pellegrini did a lot more than Rodgers, though.
No, yeah, but, well, no, Chris, what I mean is the sort of moving on. No, there is no fan that is sort of very graceful or sort of, it's very difficult to put them all in one group, is what I'm saying. And the same applies to Man City, in that just a few seasons ago, they were sort of trying to climb the leagues. And now they're sort of at the top. They don't really have that much experience of almost looking down or sort of, being at the top. And I just wonder whether that takes a little bit of time. It's about the different experiences and the ups and downs, and not every fan is good at managing both.
I just think the whole what have you done for me lately mentality is a little bit
ungrateful, stupid,
unsettling.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah, especially when it comes to the fact that you have to put it in perspective.
Yeah, football's all about the here and now, isn't it? I think that's the
But
that's what I mean. In terms of that's how it's perceived by fans, is what I'm trying to say. I'm not trying to say that's the right thing, but fans are all about what has happened almost not even this season, but, you know, the last few weeks, you know, think about Arsenal. Every week, the entire perception that the fans have of their club changes. Of course, today.
I disagree with that. I don't. I think that that's partly the way that we currently package it, because actually, you know, so for instance, it's all about the here and now, because fan cams make it about the here and now, because you get the immediate feeling, you get those sort of, oh, I'm furious, I'm angry. But actually, most fans reflect after the game, and most fans sort of come to a much more reasonable conclusion. That I just think it's that it makes it a lot easier to box fans in if you tell them it's only about the last thing, it's only about the here and now. It sort of gives you much easier threads to pull at and much easier ways to wind people up. And I think we've almost created that to make it easier for us to try to package it up and put each other in a box almost. And I think it separates fans rather than brings them together.
What I would say is the one prevalent thing that was thrown at City when they did have this money early on was the fact they hadn't won anything. I think it was the banner with the 34 years or 33 years that Man United used to lament them about. Even if you think Pellegrini did a poor job relative to what he had, he still did help them collect trophies. He still did help them move further away from that perception of them being a trophyless club and a team that didn't win things, to the point where they've collected the League Cup, they've won the Premier League under him. So again, he's helping build part of that sort of dynasty, if you will. Okay, maybe he hasn't put, you know, a few floors on top of the mansion. He's at least built enough to be proud, I think, of what he did achieve, even if it wasn't as great as was expected.
No, I agree.
What about Arsenal? Oh, sorry. What about Liverpool then, Lawrence? Not much to say about them, really. Drawing 1-1 with West Brom, or the focus is on Wednesday, really.
Yeah. Liverpool, you know, it's about perspective for Liverpool. Liverpool are angry that they've slipped out the top four, but it's very difficult to pin that on one particular person or Klopp. The fans are obviously frustrated by that. Klopp has shared that sentiment. I think Klopp is very good. All the articles over the past week have been about, you know, Klopp and how he's got the fans behind him, and, you know, how he managed to do different to what Mourinho did. When Mourinho was seen to have insulted his fans, Klopp did it in a much softer way, a kind of, you know, we're rebuilding this together. And it sort of stirred memories of Shankly and the boot room and all, you know, we're all together idea in Liverpool. The socialist appeal of a manager like that is huge for a city like Liverpool. And so I think now when Liverpool get to the final, two finals in a season, most people would say in a first season for any manager, that would be a huge achievement. But then secondly, that, you know, they've gotten through this and they're in the final. My only issue is, as a Liverpool fan, there are some shades of Sacco and the problems around Sacco and whether Liverpool should have forfeited because of that.
Interesting. What about Southampton, Kristen? Because they've kind of gone a little bit under the radar. They've been fantastic in their last 10 games, really put on a real run, and they've ended up finishing fifth, qualifying for the Europa League, beating Crystal Palace 4-1 today. Pretty impressive season from them. They're finishing 3 points behind City, after all.
Yeah, and the concerning thing is I read just recently that, in fact today, that Ronald Koeman will go to Everton if Southampton can't match the 100 million war chest. Great, really? Transfer phrase there. If you can't match the war chest that's being offered to him at Everton. I wonder if it's given in gold bars. I bet it is.
It's such a waste, because obviously, but, like, you know, converting it to gold bars and then converting it back.
You know, I wouldn't care. I'd like the ceremony of it all.
Yeah. Do you imagine him walking in the room and then just going, is that a war chest? And him just sort of going, you know, we can't send gold bars to other teams we'll give you 50 gold bars for who?
Is the paper came wrapped in for Jack Colback. So it's touched gold.
Have you seen the... I don't know whether those phrases are actually real phrases with Jack Colback, but, you know, the where he says he came to Newcastle and left Sunderland because he wanted...
Oh, yeah, he only said part of that.
Yeah, I don't... all of that sort of paraphrasing, right? I don't think he's... Because some of it... I'm sick of misattributed quotes this season.
He said like a few bits of it, but by no means. Because, I mean, even if you read it, it just doesn't sound right.
It literally sounds like him sort of looking the journalist in the eye and just sort of going, I hate them.
It would have been more believable if it had finished with, and yeah, Sunderland are dickheads, purple monkey dishwasher. But yeah, I think for Southampton, again, they've had this transition from one manager to another in Pochettino to Coleman. I think for them, again, it's an interesting summer now where I don't think they'll lose a huge wealth of that team. I don't think, well, maybe Mane is the only one I can imagine really coming under kind of speculation and transfer bids. So it's a good opportunity then for to build and just gain some continuity, because I think that's the only thing really that Southampton have missed since they came up, is the continuity of not losing key components every summer. And the fact that the TV money's there as well, it means you've got that nice little buffer that you can invest in. So I'm quite excited for Southampton summer. I think it could be a really big sort of monumental year for that club in terms of moving forward to the next level.
Everton as well, winning 3-0 against Norwich the week that Roberto Martinez was, of course, sacked. Interesting one for them, Lawrence. Kind of a new era. Tim Howard moving on. As Chris says there, Ronald Koeman is someone they're looking to bring in. Jose Mourinho is another name that's mentioned. Rafa Benitez, of course. We'll come on to him a little bit later in the questions. Bottom half of the table finish, though, for Everton. Very disappointing, considering the amount of talent they've got there. And they'll probably want to forget this season quite quickly, I imagine.
I think, again, there's probably a lot to learn from the season. They've played some lovely football at times. They'll be very eager to convince the guys who played the good football to stay, and that they've got a manager that can come in and do those sorts of things. I wonder how much of this is sort of a facade or a show to keep the fans on side and the people on side, because it seems like quite a big jump to make from Roberto Martinez to a Mourinho or a Koeman or someone like that. And I understand those managers are available, but you know, they're not going to have Champions League football, and you know, it seems like a fairly thankless task sometimes. Although you are very well loved at Everton if you do well. So I know they've got investment now. That's fantastic, especially for Merseyside. But, you know, people are going to look with trepidation as to what happened to Martinez and how quickly things sort of turned sour, which felt unusual for Everton, because actually that's not necessarily the case. Always a lot of people have patience there. But they're an intelligent set of footballing fans. So, you know, they need an intelligent manager. And at times I think they grew impatient with how Martinez almost looked like he didn't. It was perceived as if he didn't know what he was doing, at least defensively.
I don't think he did, though, did he?
I think he lost the dressing room, personally. I think that part of that was there, therefore became down, became execution of his actual plans. And I think players, you know, if you lose one player in any unit, you've sort of lost your unit, essentially. And I found that quite difficult to watch because, you know, I don't feel that he as a manager deserves that. And I think sometimes managers suffer because of individuals' agendas.
I know, yeah, I see what you're saying, but I feel like it was more is the tactical downfall, I'd say. I think everyone lost faith in him, not just the dressing room, but the fans as well.
When you sort of look.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But the result that came today, and you kind of think, well, you know, where was that in the rest of the season?
Well, yeah, now he's gone, eh? Now he's gone.
I mean, from what I've been told, he's not a particularly awkward man to work with. You know, the kind of football that he wants people to play is expansive, exciting, open football. A lot of young players in the past at Wigan and other teams have spoken about the enthusiasm with which he approached them, you know, De Santo and players like that. And, you know, I mean, I imagine there's probably conflicting reports, But there are a couple of people in that dressing room that you imagine are coming towards the end of their career now who maybe were a little bit frustrated at being left fringed or sort of not as prominent within that squad, sure, and maybe just overall frustrated.
It was the right decision to sack him, though, you'd say.
I guess I'm questioning that because I guess if you, again, there's almost shades of AVB at Chelsea for me.
I think
he'd be a great youth coach, personally.
That's
not the prominence, the pay, or the challenge, you would say, that being a top manager in the Premier League has. Although it would have rewarding factors, you know, it doesn't have what I imagine the lifestyle he's accustomed to.
To finish a few points above Watford, a few points above West Brom, the same points as Swansea, for a squad they've got, it should be a lot better. And they had one of the best strikers in the league, Romelu Lukaku. I think Martinez cannot set up a team to defend, and the stats bear that out, really. And he showed he wasn't really learning from his mistakes and almost refused to change the style of play, regardless of how much it was costing his team.
I mean, well, you could look at it either way. You could either say that, or you could say, well, yes, but he also was very sure of where he wanted to go. And again, it comes down to execution from the players. At the beginning of the season, we were looking at a very frustrating season from Tim Howard and at times that back line. And, you know, I understand you've got to assess and then sort of work with what you've got. But at the same time, if you feel like it's individual mistakes, you can't necessarily say, well, the manager should take those on immediately. That's what I kind of struggle with, I guess.
Let's wrap up the rest of results then. As we said earlier, Villa, Chelsea 1-0 against Leicester on the final day. Stoke beating West Ham 2-1, which means West Ham are relying on Manchester United to win the FA Cup final to secure qualification for the Europa League, the third qualifying round at least. Watford drawing 2-2 with Sunderland, and Kike Sanchez Flores' last game in charge. What do you make of that decision, Kristen? Because it's been met with some bafflement by fans outside of Watford, whereas it seems that the fans themselves are in agreement that this is the right decision. Surprisingly.
Yeah, I think what you can say is that the start of the season or the first half was great for him and Watford. I think his lack of flexibility is what's ultimately cost him his job. And I think that is something that any future holder of that position will need, is the flexibility. It's certainly surprising, and I think you look at Watford and the way they've handled their managerial situation with Jokanović leaving and Kike Sanchez Flores, the ownership, the Potter family are quite ruthless in that sense. My one concern for them moving forward in that regard is, do you potentially dilute the pool of potential managers by being so willing to chop and change? Because you could argue that Sanchez Flores, in being given just a season, hasn't had a real opportunity to show he could be flexible and versatile, because I imagine his first concern was always to keep them in the Premier League. I think next season's an interesting one for Watford, because personally, I could see them being just as likely to go on and build and do well as I could see them being like the Birmingham side of a few years ago, who had that chronic sophomore slump. It's just very hard to predict, personally. And I think the one good advantage they have, and I think they'll always have, is that in those satellite clubs, they've got wealth of talent that they can potentially bus in and move in. So it's hard to get any concrete conclusions from Watford at this point, because you don't even know who their manager is going to be.
Elsewhere around Europe this weekend, most of the leagues wrapped up. Barcelona winning La Liga, of course, with a 3-0 win over Granada, despite Real Madrid winning 2-0 against Deportivo. Luis Suarez and the like won La Liga. Luis Suarez finishing as the top scorer in the competition as well. Gonzalo Higuain breaking the record in Serie A, scoring 36 goals over the course of the season.
That's massive.
In style as well.
An overhead kick, right?
Oh, breaking a record that has stood since 1950.
And bear in mind, they've had some incredible strikers but in that time. Mm. Like, Batistuta's played in that league. You know, like, Totti's played in that league. Like, Inzaghi's played in that league. They've had some amazing people. I know they're, like, the peak of Italian defending, but, you know, still pretty incredible.
Jay Bothroyd played in that league.
Jay Bothroyd. Did indeed. Stuttgart relegated from the Bundesliga the first time in 41 years. Bayern Munich, of course, wrapping up the title, drenching each other in beer, as they always do. Ibrahimovic signing off from PSG with a record-breaking double. Looks like he's off to either, well, Manchester United or LA Galaxy, the rumours, but probably.
Did you see Bayern Munich do the running man challenge?
No, oh, was God, it good?
No. Was only Jerome Boateng's was good. Ribéry's Gortz's was the most white man dancing I've ever seen in my entire life.
No,
there
you go. I'm sure Xabi Alonso pulled it off almost flawlessly.
I think he had enough self-awareness not to bother.
I was going to say, did you see Xabi Alonso nailing Pep Guardiola Pep Guardiola in the face with a beer?
I
didn't.
That was as good as the running man challenge.
It's a good gif.
Zlatan left the field early.
Literally just walked off.
Yeah, just most maverick thing in the world. Just picks his kids up and he's like, right, I'm off.
See you later, lads. I'm done here.
It is. It is. He doesn't seem very emotional about it, let's put it that way.
No, he will.
Where do you think...
Don't get me wrong, he's pretentious to the point of, like, even Prince would be like, Jesus, he likes himself, doesn't he?
Yeah. Good
point. Finally, we'll say that Arsenal won 1-0 in the FA Cup final, the Women's FA Cup final. We should mention that as well. Let's move on to the questions then for the last 20 minutes or so.
And some women won. Anyway.
Someone won a title. That was another title.
You see the goal?
Won this season.
Won it.
Good goal.
No, was it a banger?
It was a beauty. An absolute curler from the left-hand side of the penalty box. Oof, just outside.
Let's move on to the question, guys. First up. Question here from Gary Goals, dated 1996. So, was Lawrence right about Spurs' mentality after all?
Yes, move on.
After Arsenal finished above Spurs for the 21st consecutive season? The only thing I'd say about that is...
You were wrong.
No, when we had a discussion before, you were saying Spurs' prevailing problem has been mentality, which I was disagreeing with.
Okay.
But I feel this season, like I said with the young squad... It's cost us at the end.
Yeah.
I'm not saying,
you've not really addressed the issue there, but okay.
John Routledge says, if you were Rafa, would you stay with Newcastle? If I were Rafa, probably not, no. What about you, Chris?
I don't think it's fair for me to answer. I think I've got an obvious horse in this race.
But if you were Rafa, you are Rafa right now.
Yeah, why not? I mean, it's assuming that... my demands are sort of met, because he said it's not about money, and I'll give him credit. I do believe him about that. If the club met the demands in terms of structure and all that kind of stuff, then why not? Because in fairness, it's an opportunity to elevate your reputation hugely by taking them back up, then taking them into an even semi-decent position. Makes it seem as if you've absolutely overhauled the place. And I get the feeling that he likes that challenge.
And that club needs, a real restructure. I guess that's the only problem is, we've seen him at other clubs. The time he's left is when he's not been given the autonomy he needs. Mike Ashley and autonomy are not two words you put together.
Chiron Pyris on Twitter says, guys, who will finish in the top four next season?
Next season? Who will finish?
He missed our next slide, but we'll forgive him that. I am going to say Spurs. Not in particular order, I should add. No particular order. Spurs, Arsenal, Man City, and Liverpool. That's what I'm going to go for. Chris, what are you going for?
Man United, Man City.
Go on.
I didn't think this through. I was going to say Spurs and Liverpool, assuming that Arsenal Wenger stays at Arsenal.
Oh, Arsenal outside the top four, you're saying, next season?
Yeah.
Okay.
And assuming Wenger stays, that's my only caveat.
I think you will be. Lawrence, what's your prediction?
I think it'll be Man City, United, Spurs.
Yes.
And I'll say Liverpool as well, just because I feel like, if Wenger stays, I feel that's a bridge too far almost.
Mo Ritz on Twitter said, do you think Dortmund will struggle after Hummels leaving, and how well will Dembele do there? Kristen, of course, Hummels confirmed moving to Bayern Munich at the end of the season. And it's also been confirmed that Dortmund assigned Ousmane Dembele from Rennes. What do you reckon? Will Dortmund struggle after Hummels leaving?
I think, assuming they don't replace him, then yes, massively, because he's a big part of that team. I did see a funny interview with Dembele, though, in France today, where he was asked which foot he prefers. Actually, it might not have been today, but which foot he prefers, and he said his left. And the guy goes... Ah, yes, but you scored with your right. He said, yeah, but I'm left-footed.
And he said, you'd also took the penalty with your right. He's like, yeah, because I can shoot better with my right, but I'm left-footed, which is very bizarre. I think they need to invest. And in fairness, they'll have the money to do so. So I wish them good luck. I can kind of see why Hummels is going. But the problem, obviously, with that move is that when you've said what he said in the public, you're going to look like a hypocrite.
Indeed. George O'Callaghan says, is Stoke finishing ninth 3 seasons on the trot, consistency or stagnation? Read the narrative at Loscast Winky Face. What do you reckon, Lawrence?
I mean, I think it's consistency. You know, to finish ninth is... It sort of depends on the context you give it. They invested in good players in the off-season, but they've never invested to the point where you feel they can keep up with everyone else. I mean, to remain in the Premier League, to come from what they came from, stability, I think, is what they're going for. I don't know whether it's progress, but I definitely think it's a form of that. It gives them the stability they need to go on and build with.
Next question is from Michael Filetti. Which manager has the toughest job next season? Let's narrow that down to the Premier League so we can focus on that. Which manager has the toughest job next season in the Premier League?
Sam Allardyce.
Toughest.
Yeah, I was going to say that, actually.
Again?
Not to keep them up, but next season he won't have the advantage of Villa, Newcastle, Norwich being so poor. I don't think the three teams in the cup will have that same struggle. And equally, he now has to really overhaul that squad and get almost every transfer right, because there is a lot of really poor players in that squad. And I think, and I've said this as well, for all the adulation and accolades that Allardyce has got, he's not done drastically better than Rafa Benitez, who's had only 10 games. And I think that it needs that little bit of perspective, is that he's had 7 months in the transfer window. I'd kind of expect him to finish above Newcastle and outside the relegation zone.
I think Claudio Ranieri is going to have quite a tough job next season, because obviously such an incredible achievement this season. And I know people are already saying, you know, and him himself is sort of playing down expectations and saying, you know, we can't win the league again. But I just feel by the very nature of how incredible this season has been, anything less will seem like a disappointment and people will begin questioning that. So it's not necessarily he's going to get sacked or that, you know, his job will be in jeopardy, but I think it's tough in terms of living up to this season is almost impossible.
I don't even know
Alan
if he's living
up. As well.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I think Pardew has a massively... The end of their season, again, it's something that's not really been talked about because there's been more prominent narratives, in inverted commas. They've had an atrocious 2016. Like, really poor. And a lot of people who scoffed at Newcastle fans and said, care for what you wish for, he's having the same, I would say, having the same situation play out at Palace that played out at Newcastle. And we never got to see how the Newcastle one concluded, so we'll see how it concludes with Palace.
I'm really interested to see how Guardiola gets on as well, specifically after not disappointing end to his time in Bayern Munich, but not winning that Champions League trophy. I think a lot of people are going to want to see him fail in England. And I think if there's any slip-ups or anything goes slightly wrong, I think a lot of pressure is going to be on him, because people are expecting him to win the league straight away. They're expecting him to walk it almost. So I think it's going to be very fascinating to see how he gets on.
It looks as if Manchester United has been rescheduled to play this Tuesday.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
Just a quick update. That one comes live
behind closed doors, is what I heard.
That's interesting, because obviously the fans that have paid for tickets and stuff, those guys would surely have to be refunded. And then obviously it also, I mean, it doesn't really disrupt preparation for the FA Cup final, but no, it's certainly not perfect. It's certainly not ideal, is it?
Is that the only one that pictures it happening in a dining room with a sponge ball, like when you were kids?
Yeah.
Said behind closed doors.
This one's going to come behind closed doors. Sorry.
Here's a good question from Nico. Which style of football do you think will dominate Europe in the next few years? Not that I believe any style is superior to another. It's just that football seems to gravitate from success to success, regardless of whether they have a true understanding of it.
What does that mean?
The first part of the question was, which style of football do you think will dominate Europe in the next few years? I mean, we're sort of seeing the success of counter-attacking football with Atletico Madrid and Leicester, of course. Is that something we're expecting to see become more prevalent across Europe? I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, you could say the opposite as well, in that, you know, Real Madrid aren't only counter-attacking. You could also say that, you know, some people misread maybe what Klopp's doing and call that just counter-attacking football. Maybe you'll see a formation. I mean, Dave sort of predicted, and it's already sort of happening, the prevalence of four at the back, one, and then 4-1, or sort of a 4-3-2-1. But then, you know, there are a lot of people playing three at the back. I think it is, you know, it's obviously changing the way that people are passing and trying to move the other team. I mean, Kristen, I don't know if you agree, but it is sort of that it's the shape of the five in midfield, which is interesting depending on which manager you look at.
No, it isn't. You fucking idiot.
Good.
I'm kidding, of course. I think in some ways football will mirror fashion, in the sense that we'll see a renaissance of the 90s and the idea of defenders taking centre stage. We look at like Alderweireld, for example, and the Simeone, these guys who really do just seem to get off on defending and keeping a clean sheet. I think that's what we'll start to see now. Teams that put a lot more emphasis and onus on being able to defend first and taking real joy from earning the clean sheet. And I think you look at the teams that have succeeded this season, Atletico being a good one, Leicester being another one that you touched on there. They are and there's a story that Ruud Gullit always tells about Milan in the 90s, where he said they would play a training exercise where it would be the back four. So I think it's Baresi, Maldini, Costa Corta, and I forget who the fourth one was, might have been Panucci, someone else. And he said we would play the back four against the rest of the team and we wouldn't score a goal for 60 minutes because they were so organised, they knew how to keep a line expertly and they just understood how to defend so well. And I think we'll start to see something similar with that. Obviously, it's different because the offside rules changed a bit. I think you will start to see a similar sort of thing come to the fore over Europe in the next few years.
Here's a good one from James Halloran. Dave's not here to answer back to this, but he said, I just want to say that Dave's call on Bilic needs to be relinquished. West Ham will falter at some point, but he can't just then say, I told you so. Now, if you're not familiar with what was being referred to here, Dave famously said at the start of this season that West Ham's manager, Slaven Bilic, would be the first man to be sacked this season. Obviously, that didn't come to pass, and he's had a very successful season, I think, by all accounts. Mm. And Dave's call needs to be relinquished, we're told.
I mean, really, that's for Dave to reply to, isn't it? Dave's got to deal with his own shit.
We need to get back on to that, to respond to that one. Final few questions. Who would win the Premier first, Leicester or Tottenham?
Spurs.
I'm not quite sure what he's saying there.
I'm pretty sure they're just asking who's going to win the Premier League next out of those two.
Right, yeah.
Cocaine, it's a hell of a drug.
Yeah.
And I was just the Premier, yeah.
Like, oh, cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Lots of Tottenham banter flying in.
Yeah, that's kind of sad, isn't it? Yeah, for you.
Piotr Gala, is Adam okay?
Are you?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I was expecting this last week. So,
oh, come on. You were not, because that's not what you said on the podcast.
Mate, Spurs are Spurs. You know what I mean? Spurs are bloody Spurs.
Hashtag mentality.
Still in the Champions League. See?
Yeah,
it could be a lot worse.
Yeah, it could be a lot worse. You could be, you know, Arsenal with false hope.
In that sense, you'll start the season, the pair of you, on the same sort of level, in the sense that you'll both be looking for the Premier League title. You'll both be playing in the Champions League.
Mm. Who do you think, here's a question from Vincent Rodriguez on this topic, who do you think Spurs should buy to help on and off the pitch? Let's focus on the pitch. Is there any names you think that maybe Spurs should be looking to bring in next summer? Any suggestions? We had a chat the other day about how we quite like Christian Benteke at the club, weirdly. This is Barnaby from Spurred On, sort of saying, you know, if Liverpool did sell up, would we mind taking him? I do think we need, desperately still need that other striker. We talk about this at the start of the season. Harry Kane has pretty much played almost every single minute of Premier League football for Spurs this season, been running to the ground, essentially. So it would be nice to have someone who could do the job. Batshuayi is another name that always mentioned. Lacazette as well. And it looks like Leon may have to sell players. Any suggestions,
who's
Kristen?
Marseille,
you think?
Guy? There's a guy in Marseille, isn't there? So it was...
Michy Batshuayi.
Yeah, Batshuayi, which I always butcher. Any other names, Kristen, that you think may suit Spurs? Gonzalo Higuain.
I mean, again, if you want to spend, is it 94 million euros or something like 95? Again, it's an option. That's the difficulty. In some sense, it's hard to place where Tottenham are in the grand scheme of things relative to who they could attract. I'm really struggling. There's no names that jump out right away as that should be the guy.
As I said, I hope he brings in some experience. That's what I said. I mean, it looks like Berahino's coming in. You know, it looks like we are adding some young players, but I hope as well Pochettino realises that, okay, this season was fantastic. A young team sort of taking the lead by storm before the last four games. And hopefully now with being a little bit more experienced, they can bring a level head to the side, which would be nice.
That's the other point as well. I think you make a great point there in saying that when I look at Spurs, I don't think of them as buying players that are already made stars. I always think of them buying guys like Berahino, who, with a little bit of work, a little bit of polish, becomes something very good. So you look at, let's say, Granit Xhaka, for example. That's the kind of player, but I don't know if Tottenham really need that kind of player in the middle of midfield. As wonderful a player as he is, I mean, his disciplinary record's pretty poor, but other than that, he's a very good player.
I just feel like we need backup for the key positions. Like I say, when Dembele, you know, it was suspended towards the end of the season, we missed him so much. We missed him throughout the season. Someone like Ali goes missing, someone like Kane. We need more backup, solid backup for these sort of key positions, and hopefully we'll be able to bring that in. Yeah. But for now, though, that does wrap up the last front three of the season.
Well, I mean, but then maybe we'll make like Wednesday or whatever a proper review thing, you know?
I'd quite like to do a little end of season awards thing, you know, give out a few awards and things like that.
Exactly. Although Faruha's just tweeted in 1 minute ago, Adam Bolt wound. Oh,
decent banter, lads.
Great
decent
banter.
Why don't you Farouk off?
Yeah,
exactly. Thank you very much, Chris.
Oh, God.
It was a good...
That was a great Chris
ending. Painful day.
Painful day.
Guys,
painful day.
Thank you very much for listening to the front three. It's a sad day for me. I hope most of you out there enjoyed your season and you've had a good final day. For now, though, Lawrence, where can the good people find you until next Wednesday?
On Wednesday, you'll be able to find me in the morning in Glasgow for the Football Republic playing on the Celtic's hallowed turf. And then in the evening...
What? You'll be...
Yeah. In the evening...
Why didn't I get this invite? Hang on. Whoa.
And then in the evening, because I work hard, because in the evening, you'll be able to find me in Liverpool wearing a Liverpool shirt in the fan zone covering the final with TFR.
I'd have done that. I said I could play a Parkhead before.
You can peruse off now, Chris. So find me there, TFR this week. And of course, tomorrow morning or Monday morning this week, announcing the England squad on TFR and indeed Squawker.
Fantastic stuff.
Kristen, where can they find you?
On my way to Adam Bolton's house, that's where.
With a gun.
You've got something to talk about, young man. I will be at the Copper America this summer.
Yes, he will.
A lot of fun. Prior to that,
Ian Wright's house
can be found on Twitter at KHENEAG. Doesn't let me go to his house.
No.
always have to make him in public.
After that incident.
Incident. I just said pay for lunch. But yeah, other than that, I will be likely in the States. I'll be at the New York Derby and a few other places.
Fantastic stuff.
Been away, basically.
Yeah.
Living the dream. Living the dream.
Literally, yeah. It's very good that Kristen's sort of finally getting over to the States. Like, it's been a while coming, but it's now nice to see you, you statophile. What about you, Adam?
Approving.
Oh, you can find me and send all your Spurs banter and abuse at Adam Botwood on Twitter. Getting a lot of it today.
There's a great picture of you circulating online at the moment, of you just looking so crestfallen.
I believe it's on your Twitter, Lance.
Yes, go and retweet it now.
Go and retweet it.
It's great because it. What I've also done is taken a perfect picture of you on a green screen so we can put you anywhere in the world.
Yeah, yeah. Just put like that Michael Jordan meme behind me. Or even on my face if you've got Photoshop. I think that would sum it up.
That's going to be tweeted within 2 minutes, right?
I've got an update of what I'm going to be doing this summer.
Yeah, just Photoshopping. Stuff about me. Oh, guys, thank you very much for listening.
And until Wednesday or Thursday, whenever we do the podcast, let us know your highlights of the season and awards and, you know, yes, award categories, those kind of things. We'd love to know so you guys get a say on the awards, because otherwise it's going to be bloody boring.
Please do at the Front Three on Twitter. Send us your moments of the season, goals of the season, you know, players, all that sort of good stuff. Until Wednesday, have a great week. And goodbye.
Bye.
Ooh. Fucking Spurs.
At least you didn't get relegated.
Please leave a message after the tone. When you finish recording, please hang up or press the hash key for more options.
Hey, Davis Lawrence. Just going to check that you're okay. I know you were at the United game today. Wanted to get a quick account. But, maybe you're having too much of a good time or you're on the train back, I don't know. We'll hear more about it on Wednesday. Never mind, Dave. See you later. Have a good time with all your mates. He's gone. See you, Dave.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
He's gone. Oh, bye.